Well, as you know, France is an amazing and empowering journey. I would say of all the tours that I do, actually I forgot to welcome all of you anyway, so I would really, really thank you for joining in this evening. And France is just an amazing tour. It's an empowering and inspiring spiritual tour. It's everything to do with Mary Magdalene is very inspiring and empowering, which is also extremely demanding of the people that come on the tour. And she, it's a tour whereby if you have issues that you're not really looking at, they will come up for you. She is very much a way of bringing up the energies emotionally and every other way for you to look at what is going on in your life. I've had people come back, totally change their jobs, everything, their way of life, everything after this tour. It is, I would say, possibly all my tours are transformative, but this is the one that is possibly, I would say, that really, really gets people to look at themselves and look at what it is that is going on in their life. It's also a very healing, an amazing amount of people have had amazing healings on this tour because it covers a lot of ground. It covers Mary Magdalene, it covers the Knights Templars, it covers the Cathars. We deal with Mother Mary down in Lourdes, and we have, of course, finish up with Chartres and walking the labyrinth. So it has a lot of different aspects to it, and so but it's a land rich in culture, of course, and it has a lot to do with the Grail legends, and a lot of it's in the symbology that you come across as we quest. And most of my job will be to point out the symbology, to explain the symbology, and let you have your own experience with it. And then we talk about it afterwards. But it's a land where it's got Celtic roots, it's got later Christian, it's got Gnostic, it's got Jewish. And of course, the Moors were around there, the Muslims were there for a while. So you have a lot happening as you go through the lands of France. And so if at any time, feel free to ask me a question. I have no problems with answering questions. If I say something that you're not fully au fait with, just ask me to repeat it. Or if you have any questions about something that I say, just ask me. And of course, we visit some amazing places like the Mary Magdalene Grotto and Saint Baume and Saint Maurice de la Mer and Arles and Carcassonne and Montsegur, sort of just to mention a few. It is just an outstanding trip. And of course, we start by meeting at Nice Airport and at 1 o'clock, and then we depart for Saint Baume, which is about an hour and a half's journey. And when we get there, we go into the Mary Magdalene Chapel. And at the Mary Magdalene Chapel, it's in an old hostel, and it was a hostel in the ancient times for the travelers, for the pilgrims that came to visit. It's still run by the Dominican nuns. It's kind of more of like a hotel, but it's more of a retreat kind of hotel. You could end up in a dormitory. I don't put people up there because you have no idea what to expect. So I don't put people up there because you could end up in a room with 5 or 6 or 10 other people. So you don't want that. But it's a beautiful place, but it has a chapel attached to it. And this is where we go the first day, because this is where you're going to have your initial introduction to Mary Magdalene. And there are various statues of her within the chapel. There is a beautiful wood carving of her with the alabaster jar. I think it's one of her finest pieces that I have seen anywhere. But inside in the chapel itself, there are some absolutely amazing frescoes. And the first time I went to France, it was during a big heat wave. And the first time I went to the grotto, shall we put it that way? It was during a big heat wave, and all of the national parks were closed because it was over 100 degrees. And they didn't want any people going in, because there was lots of fires in France at that time. And they didn't want any people going into these national forests because they were afraid that, you know, they might throw a cigarette end or something like that and start the fire. So I didn't get to go to the grotto. This is when I was doing my research for the tour. And so anyway, I ended up going in, and I had a lady that was driving me around, showing me all the different places. And after about half an hour in front of one of the frescoes, she came and tapped me on the shoulder, and she said, "Are you okay? Are you still with us?" And I was just having an amazing experience with one of the frescoes. And I did for several years after that. Two of the paintings there, two of the frescoes that have immense, for me, they have immense power. And so people have different things. And every year that I go, I see something new that I haven't seen before. It's like, you know, and it was only 2 years ago, I noticed that in the painting that I had my first major experience with, that the clouds, and within the clouds were faces of angels. But I had not seen those until 2 years ago. And so different things, excuse me, like that happen. So we go there because that's going to be your introduction to Mary Magdalene.
Finbar?
Yeah.
This is Susan Coburn. I just,
Susan.
A couple of minutes ago, tuned into the call. Just wanted you to know I was listening.
Okay, thank you. And it's a wonderful thing, you know, when you have these different experiences. And every year, you know, sort of, I've been doing this tour since 2003, and every year when I go back, I'm there sometimes twice a year, I learn something new every time because the energies are different every time I go there, because my energies are different. And the great thing about a sacred sites tour is that no matter how many times you visit a sacred site, you will find that every time you go there, you will have a different experience because your energy is different. If your vibration has changed, you're going to have a different energy, a different experience at that site. Because the energy of the site is the ancient wisdom, and it will open up to you as much as you're ready to receive. And so as you are opening up each year or each site you visit, if you have any sacred sites near where you live, if you go visit it and then go back a little while again later, I know you folks in Sedona have plenty of them. My favorite one there is Cathedral Rock. Mm-hmm. And I had a come to Jesus meeting at Cathedral Rock, so I have very fond memories of Cathedral Rock. I learned a lot at Cathedral Rock. And but every time I go back, or even go back to Sedona, so, you know, sort of, every time you go back to a sacred site, you will have a different experience there because you're at a different place vibrationally. It's like the first time you go there, you have, say, for example, you have a healing. And then the second time you go there, you might have a different experience. And the third time you go there, you'll have it. It's because it's where you are in your own vibration. That is what's going to open up for you. and the energies of these sacred places. And so the following morning, we take, after breakfast, we go down and we start our walk up to the grotto, which takes anywhere from 30 to 45 minutes, depending on the pace that people walk. And people go there at their own pace. But we start off at an ancient oak tree there, because we go up what's called the royal journey of this, because that's where all of the kings and everything in the ancient times, they went in pilgrimage. And some of them went up on their hands and knees. It's an ancient pilgrimage route, and there's an ancient oak tree down there. And so they started at this oak tree, and they worked up from there. And it's a very sacred mountain, because it's sacred to Isis. People have been coming there for thousands of years on pilgrimage. And you know, you have sacred oak and birch trees there, and it has an amazing underground water reservoir there. And so it has a tremendous amount of feminine energy. It also is said that Hiram Abiff, who was the architect of the Temple of Solomon, took refuge there when he was persona non grata back in Israel. Well, it wasn't Israel then, but anyway, there are all these legends about this place. And, you know, as I said, it's sacred to Isis. And then, of course, Mary Magdalene Cave. And the cave itself is an amazing cave. It's a very, very large cave. It's and there's one section of it where you go down steps to a lower level. And down there, there's a water. You can see the water. There's a big trough of water down there. And then there's a statue of Mary Magdalene. And there's about three very special energy spots down there where I take people to experience. Some people have amazing experiences down there with Mary Magdalene on the lower level. And then you go up to the upper level where there's an altar where the Dominicans are the guardians of the place right now. And they have been since 1200 and something. And there is then a beautiful sculpture of Mary Magdalene, of her being lifted up by angels. And there are some relics of Mary Magdalene. And then there's a beautiful spot where Mary Magdalene used to do her water initiations. And we have to do a little inveigling to get in there, because the priests don't like us going there. So we have to do certain things from time to time so that the priests don't know what we're doing, because they get very upset with me when they find out what I'm doing and what I'm showing people. Because they told me about 8 years ago, that place was specially reserved for the priests. You know, it was not for every, and they have some places roped off, but we don't mind about the ropes. We just walk over them and move to where we need to go to, and we're priests, all priests in our own, priestesses in our own right, so we don't need to be bound by their rules. It is a place given to us all. So, who's that?
That's Charlie, I'm Marilyn's husband.
Oh, okay. And so, I don't, you know, sort of, I don't pay any attention to the rules. I just watch out to make sure that they're not around when I'm doing certain things, because there's no point in bringing confrontation with them. And so, but it does open us all up, and we spend the whole morning up there. Then we come back down, and there is a holy water source called the Source that we stop at on the way up and on the way down. And if people want to drink the water, some people put their feet in it. They have washed their feet in it. They have different experiences. And up at where I was saying that Mary Magdalene used to do her water initiations, we can do a little ritual, a little ceremony up there with a water initiation as well for the people. So it depends on what opens up on the day and what everybody wants to do. So we just open it up and we let it sit, and then we go back down and we have lunch, and then from there we drive to Arles. And Arles is just an amazing city. We stay overnight in Arles. And the following morning, it was Arles is a city that was known as Little Rome. Like, if you weren't a member of high society in Rome, if you were down, say, on the third echelon, well, if you moved to Arles, you would have more than likely been in the top echelon of people in Arles. So a lot of people that weren't, and it has like its little Colosseum, it has all the different things, it has some very beautiful, it's Colosseums and everything there. But for us, the most important thing is St. Trophimus Church. And this church has so much symbology in it. It's just absolutely outstanding. And it shows us, takes us through Templar stuff. It takes us the awakening of the pineal gland. It shows us all sorts of things about the Grail family. And in this church, there is a tremendous amount of symbology. And we look at that. And then further up the way, there's the Church of Mary Magdalene, which is one of the starting points of the journey to St. James in Compostela. And there is also from there, we can see there's a Templar commandery. And so we can see the Templar commandery. Sometimes if we have the time, we go visit that, but that's only if we have, if time allows. And but you do get to see it. And then in the afternoon, we depart for St. Maurice de la Mer, where we have a little picnic on the beach. And then people get to, this is where it is said that Mary Magdalene came ashore. And so with the Grail family and Mary Jacobi and Mary Salome. So everything at St. Maurice de la Mer is about St. Sarah, about Mary Magdalene coming ashore there. St. Sarah is there, and Mary Jacobi and Mary Salome. And on the 24th of May each year, there is the Festival of St. Maurice de la Mer, which is the Festival of St. Sarah and Mary Magdalene. And so on the 24th of May each year, there is a procession that takes St. Sarah down to the ocean. And it's known as the Gypsy Festival because St. Sarah is the patron saint of the gypsies. And then on the 25th of May, they take Mary Jacobi and Mary Salome down. And the one on the 24th is much more frenzy and everything attached with it. And then a lot of the gypsies leave after that. So on the 25th, there's not as many people there, but there's still a lot of people there. And so I have been there several years. And the church, the basilica, is an amazing basilica. It's more like a fortress. It was built by the Knights Templar. And it has within it a sweet water well. And at that well, anything can happen. It has amazing, absolutely amazing powers. And people have all sorts of experiences there. There are several energy points within the basilica. Of course, you go visit St. Sarah. And as well, there are various places where you can communicate with Mary Magdalene. But the well is amazing. It is... I had a whole bunch of stuff come up for me there one year where I had everything about abandonment. I didn't know I had any abandonment issues in my life. But there I had the vision of all the times in my life that I had felt abandonment. And it was absolutely amazing. And I just was amazed. And so people have different, they have no idea what's going to happen to them when they sit down and feel the energy of this well and what it's going to bring up. So there's about five major energy points in this basilica. And there is some various relics that you can touch and things that open you up to all sorts of experiences. And then from there we go to Carcassonne. And Carcassonne is an ancient Druid city, and where the Druids and the Phoenicians did a lot of trading. And it was an ancient ceremonial site as well for the Druids and the Phoenicians. And there was a lot of interaction between the Druids and the Phoenicians. And if you go into Celtic folklore, it shows that a lot of the kings of Ireland married the daughters of the pharaohs. And the most famous of them being Scotia, which Scotland is called after. And so that's a whole other talk. But there's all sorts. So there is a major connection between the Druids and the Phoenicians, as there is between the Druids and the Essenes. And so Carcassonne is, and there is a beautiful church there called the Church of Lazarus. And it has within it a well. It has within it a beautiful statue of Anna and Mary. It has an amazing sculpture of Jesus and God the Father, and a communication between the two of them. And it's amazing the way the head of the Father, the beard, is bringing down, connecting the energies into the crown chakra of Jesus. It is a marvelous piece of work. And then, of course, you have everything to do with Saint Roch. We will get to know Saint Roch very well. Saint Roch was a companion of Mary Magdalene, as was Saint Maximus. And they traveled, and St. Roch had a stigmata on his right leg, just above his above his knee, and he died in jail in Montpellier. And so there's lots of history. And then, of course, the next day we go to Minerve, and we see, look at the goddess of Minerve, and of course she is the goddess of wisdom. And this was also the place of the burning of 150 Cathars on the feast day of Mary Magdalene in 1210. And, of course, the Dove of Minerve is there, which is also outside the village church. And then we go into the village church, which is the Church of St. Stephen. And we visit, there's a museum there. We have to go into the museum, because if we don't go into the museum, we can't get into the church, because the caretaker of the museum has the key to the church. So, and that's the only way I can get the key into the church. And it has an amazing ancient altar within the church. And when you put your hands on it, you can feel the energy. And people have wonderful experience with it. It's a beautiful little town. We go down, we do to where the part where the Cathar burning took place, or that people believe where it took place. And we feel, but you don't feel any sadness or anything down there, because these were people who walked into the fire in joy. They were not, they were perfected ones, and they were able to walk in with peace and love and joy in their heart. And so they did that with love, so that you don't have any sadness there, because there is nothing to be sad about. And then on our way back from there, we stop off in a beautiful little village. It's called the Snail Village. It's in, and it houses a Black Madonna in the church there. It's an artist colony, and it's built like a snail, and you just weave your way around into it, and right in the center of it is a church, and there's a beautiful artist that I know there, and she lets us have the key, and we get to look at her artwork and everything else, and then we go into the church and admire the Black Madonna. And so we go from there, then we head towards near Renault-le-Château, and we stay in a town called Ailette-les-Bains, and we stay in an ancient bishop's palace. Ailette-les-Bains is a very sacred town. It is known as the source of water, and Nostradamus lived there. And but in this place, the bishop's palace that we stay in has amazing energy. It's a very basic hotel, but it has wonderful food, and it has beautiful grounds, and it's right by the river. And so we stay there for 4 nights. And there's a lot to see from there. We go to Montsegur, we go to Renault-le-Château, we go to Arc, we go to the Source, we go to Mount Bougerac, where the ancient Essenes had a community, and we have various little talks and ceremonies, and of course we go to the goddess chair. And so we have a lot to do while we're there, but we have lots of time to do it, and we move, we do some meditations, and we do some talks, and we do some experiencing and sharing, and we do some ceremonies and rituals. And as well, in Ailette-les-Bains, there is the Angel Sanctuary, and the Angel Sanctuary is an amazing place. And it is run by a couple called Eugene and Laurie. And Laurie was an Irish Olympic hopeful. And she was actually so good that the trainer of the English team was her trainer. And she got injured in training and became paralyzed. And she was in bed, paralyzed, and she was there for a couple of months in bed, paralyzed. And then one day a being appeared to her and told her to start painting angels. And she started painting angels, and she was cured. And she since got married to Eugene, and they have a beautiful 8-year-old daughter. But it's an amazing place, and she has 35 angels there, and it's all that she has painted, and they're all the originals. And you sit with the angels, and you can meditate with these angels, and people have amazing experiences. Last year, for the first time, I noticed they have an angel called the Angel of Exploration. And the Angel of Exploration has started to change the painting. And there is like an equal Durham cross appearing on the breast of the angel. It is amazing to watch this, because it was much more, I was there in May, and then I was there again in September, and it was much more prevalent in September than it was in May. So you have no idea what's going to happen. And of course, up at Renault-le-Château, we have everything to do with the legends of Renault-le-Château, and the priest there, and the housekeeper, and if he discovered the ancient money of that belonged to the Knights Templars. And nobody knows because Saunier is didn't leave anything of where he got to do. But the church is amazing. He restored the church in a magnificent way. And it is with a lot of symbology. And there is one on the 14th station. It clearly points to you that Jesus did not die on the cross. And it shows that the moon is high in the sky when Jesus has been taken down from the cross. And so we'll go into all of that when we're there. But it's, and then there is another, I think it's on the third station, there is another thing with a child. It's all symbology. Everywhere in that we're going, France, most of what we'll see, and as people move through France, they will see all the different things. But it's a journey about symbology, because the symbology awakens the DNA, and it opens up a memory within, as well as the energy of the land. It opens up memories within each of us. And then, of course, you have Montsegur, which is an amazing place. It was the temple of last resistance, of course, for the Cathars. It was where the Book of Love was kept. It was a Cathar seminary, and they just had it. It's just an absolutely amazing place. And it takes about 30 minutes to climb up there, and it's a trail. It is not like walking up to the grotto. You have whilst it's a little on the steep side going up to the grotto, it's gradual incline all the ways to getting you up there. But here you're actually climbing on a mountain trail to get up to Montsegur. But once you get up there, it's amazing. And the entrance doorway and everything else there, and again, symbology, and it tells you why you're there. And when you see and take into account the numerology and everything else associated with the site and the doorways and the holy altars and everything else that are within there, it is a place where one has amazing experiences. And so it is said that the Book of Love was there, and that they had it. And it is said, you know, when they negotiated the truce, they negotiated a time to prepare themselves. But during that time, three children, or four children, two boys and two girls, were taken down the side of the mountain. And when you see where they were taken down, it's amazing. You can't believe how they were taken down, because it's straight down. And it is said that they left there with two elder chaperons, and that they ended up at Montserrat, and that is the last known place of where the Book of Love was. And then the Cathars, of course, they left a prophecy. That was the other thing. They left a prophecy in before they walked down into the fire. They left a prophecy that the Church of Love would be awakened in 1986. And they left that prophecy in 1244. And so I'll give everybody a copy of the prophecy. If anybody wants it, just email me and I'll send it to you. And but it's just, and of course we see several black Madonnas on our way, and then of course we experience there's a beautiful black Madonna in Limoux. And it's also an amazing church there where this Black Madonna is held. And it has a healing well, and it's very much a goddess temple, this church. And it has, again, unbelievable symbology within it. And Then there's Mount Bougerac there, which is where the site of the Essene community, and as you know, Jesus and Mary Magdalene, they were part of the Essenes. And I have been through an Essene initiation cave there, and it was one of the most profound experiences of my life. And then there is, of course, Arc, which is close by as well. And Arc is where it is said that Mary Magdalene wrote her gospel. And then there is the source, which is at Rennes-les-Bains. And Rennes-les-Bains has this sacred water that comes out of Holy Well there, and next to it is the goddess chair. It's known, of course, as the devil's chair, but it is not the devil's chair, it's a goddess chair. And then experience when one sits in that chair and other things to happen. Yeah, sure.
Here in Arizona, where they have the sacred wells, there's often little bottles that you can buy there where you can get a little sample of the water and you can take it home. Can you do that there?
Oh, yeah, you can. Well, there's no, you'd have to bring your own bottle.
Oh, you have to bring your own bottle?
Yeah, because this is up on the side of a hill, and there's nobody there but us.
So how about when we get there, can you take us to a place where we can buy them, or do we have to bring them all the way from Arizona?
Oh, no. We'll find you plenty of places. The only place where you can buy bottles are, when we get to Lourdes, they have plenty of bottles there. But we can go into a local store and get some bottles to take some of this water with you. That's not a problem. People do that all the time. Yeah. It's not a problem. Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. And, of course, then when we're finished at in that area, we move down to Lourdes, and they will sell you anything in Lourdes. Lourdes is it's an amazing place, lots of people, but as long as you forget about all the stuff associated with the church. The church is absolutely beautiful. There's lots of things to walk through in the church and see. I usually let people browse through the church on their own because there's so much to see. There's two different churches, one built on top of the other, and one is more modern than the other. And they have their own, people have their own experiences there. But I usually, we take people down there about 3, 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and walk them through, and we walk through because I want people to understand how they can feel the water in the grotto. And so when we get down to the grotto, which is the most important part, and we have to line up, and so we go on a line, and there's lots of ushers there trying to move you along pretty fast, but we kind of move a little slower. And I teach people how to feel the water, the energy of the water, through the palms of their hands. And it is an amazing experience for people to have as they get this. So I take them through one time or maybe two times and then see. And then people go off to do their own thing and visit the churches and stuff. And then we come back, we have dinner. And after dinner at 9 o'clock, we go back to the grotto. And it's very important that we go back at 9 o'clock because that's when the healing procession starts. And 85-90% of the people, or maybe 95% of the people, go on this healing procession. And that goes way up to the end of the grounds and comes all the ways back down and finishes up at the cathedral. So that gives us a window of 45 minutes to an hour where there's very few people at the grotto. So that's the time that we spend at the grotto. And then after the procession, of course, people start to come back again. But everybody, I have yet to take a person who hasn't had a special experience at Lourdes. Lourdes is a transformational site. and people who had no interest in being in Lourdes or even going there, they were on the tour, suddenly found themselves, like I'd meet them in the following morning at 6:30 or 7 o'clock, and they'd be coming in, and I'd say, where were you? Oh, we've been down at the grotto since 4 o'clock or from 3 o'clock, some of them there all night. And some of them go to bed and they just can't sleep, so they get up and they go back down to the grotto. And so people have that, it has that type of effect on people, especially people who have no desire to be there. They seem to have the most profound experiences, because Mary is definitely waking them up. And so then the following day, we leave from there and we travel to Montsegur, or Rocamadour. And Rocamadour is just an amazing medieval pilgrimage site. And it's a town, it's built into the side of a mountain. And it is very sacred. It has the sacred crypt of Saint Amador. It has beautiful, powerful black Madonnas. It has several levels to the town because you're going up through this rock, and there's different churches as you go up through it. But there's outside of Rocamadour, there's about 4 kilometers. There's another little village, and there's an amazing black Madonna in the church there. And the people in Rocamadour don't even know that this other church is there, or that there's a black Madonna there. So it's very, very interesting see, and it's been there for thousands of years, and as a sacred site, and the present configuration of it, it's dates back to, I think it's 1479. And they're like hanging on the side of a cliff. And it's just an amazing place to walk and walk you up the steps. It's like you're ascending from the lower town up to the churches. And it's like a whole group of buildings on the cliff. But it's just an amazing, powerful place. And there are different places that you visit in it, and it has all these different experiences. People feel different things on their body. And it has, a very famous sword there that's dangling from a rock. And it's just there. And it's supposed to be the sword of Amadeus, and that he put it there, and that this was that there was no more war, no more fighting, and it has like just an amazing black Madonna, a couple of black Madonnas there, and then we move from Rocamadour, and we go from there to Chartres. And we arrive in Chartres on Thursday night, and then Thursday evening, we usually get there at about 6 o'clock, somewhere between 5 and 6 o'clock. And we have dinner, and we have a look at the cathedral from the outside, and sometimes there's a light show. And if there is, we enjoy the light show. And then after breakfast the following morning, by 9:30, the very latest, we are back at the cathedral, because then the labyrinth is opened. Depending on what is going on, and depending on what time the priests decide to say Mass. And so sometimes it's opened at 8:30, but very rarely for the last couple of years it hasn't been opened at 8:30. About 4 or 5 years ago it would be opened every morning. You could depend on it being opened at 8:30 in the morning. But got a new parish priest, and he's kind of changed it around a little bit, and they moved the altars as well. And so it now doesn't open until usually 9:30. And so then it's open. The only time that it won't be open is if there is a funeral or if there is a wedding, or if they decide they're going to have a concert. And so there is no way of knowing any of those things in advance. And so then we get to walk the labyrinth. I can walk the labyrinth as many times as one likes. I usually suggest to people that they walk it 3 times in and out on the labyrinth. And then that there's another way, another way of walking the labyrinth on the outside. And I show people how to walk it on the outside as well as walk it on the inside. And it is on the way in, you know, in the labyrinth, if you have a challenge that you're dealing with, you look at it on the way in and you get your answer on the way out. And there's 6 petals around the center of the labyrinth. And then there's the center point. And so if you have something that you want to ground it in to unearth, you walk clockwise on the 6 petals. And there's Kathleen McGowan has written a wonderful book about, it's called A Source of All Miracles. And it's about the Our Father and the labyrinth. And the 6 petals, plus the 7th, which is the center. And she talks about doing it, but Kathleen and I have disagreed about this even since before she wrote the book. And she says that there's only one way to walk the petals. I say there are 2 ways, because in the ancient Celtic tradition and everything else, if you want to ground something into the earth, you walk it clockwise. If you want to lift it up into the heavens, you walk counterclockwise. So depending on what you want to do and what it is that you are doing as you walk into the labyrinth, that's you then decide when you get up to the 6 petals whether you're going to go clockwise or counterclockwise. And so this cathedral it's a book in stone. It's about rebirth and rejuvenation. There is nothing in this whole cathedral about death. There is nothing. It's a book in stone, and there is no crucifix in stone in this whole cathedral. There is a crucifix on the altar, which is, you know, but there is no other crucifix. There's a wooden crucifix on the back wall of the church, but there is nothing in stone, because you have the Anna window, and then you have the Mary window, and they are the 2 most powerful windows, because Anna is about the rebirth and Mary is about the rejuvenation. And so we go through the doors and windows, and you could be there for like a month. I know a little, just like a tiny, teensy little bit about this cathedral and about its symbology. There is so much to know. There's a guy called Malcolm Miller that has written several books about it, and he will tell you that he will not write anything about the esoteric or the spiritual side of it. He won't even discuss Mary Magdalene or anything like that. But he's all about the architecture and everything else, and he says that even though he has been there for 40 years, he still doesn't know everything. So that will tell you, you know, about it. There is, of course, as well, there's the 7 chakras of the cathedral, which we will walk. There is down the crypt, there is a beautiful well. You can't get water from it. They have a screen over it, and the water is too far down anyway. But it's the cathedral is built on an ancient Druid site. And in the center of this ancient Druid site, there was a well that had 7 streams running out from it, and the cathedral was built on top of that. And so they don't tell you anything about the 7 streams. They will tell you about, they will let you look at the well, but they don't, nowhere is it mentioned in the Catholic Church that there is anything about the 7 streams. And the other thing about it is there's, of course, St. Matilda, who is supposed to have been thrown down the well by her father, who was the Roman administrator around there at the time. And she got thrown down just a couple of days before Constantine signed the Edict of Milan, allowing the Roman Catholic Church to no longer be persecuted, and he threw her down the well because she became a Catholic. Actually, what that was before the Catholic, before the Roman Catholic Church, and then of course later, Rome adopted the Catholic Church as it was known. Then it became the Roman Catholic Church, and then it changed from being the Apostolic Church to a state religion. So then it lost all its zeal. The bench was broken. Everything, the seal was broken from there on. So here we are 2,000 years later, coming back for the second coming, and the second coming is taking place with each of us. And here we are in a period of awakened consciousness, which started in 1987, and we are working our way through that. And so this year is the year of awakening to the soul's consciousness. And so this is one of the great things about the trip to France. It awakens all sorts of things. As you look at this, at the symbology of France, it awakens so many wonderful things within you. And so then after that, we depart for Paris. And we go to see the Louvre, but before we go to see the Louvre, we go to a beautiful church on the left bank called the Saint-Sulpice. And it's on the Magdalene line, the Rose line, and it's the church that's in Dan Brown's book, and they used to have all sorts of people there trying to debunk, and if they saw that you were interested in it, they would just go berserk. And now they're starting to cover more and more of the line with chairs, and so and then they have built the altar out over some of it, and so it's interesting, but it still happens. The sun still comes through the window and goes up and touches the obelisk and everything else. But they have put they've blocked that pane of the window now. So you know, it's interesting. Here again is another place where I get into trouble with the priests. And one day there was a man there, and he got very upset with me. And when I said to him, "Well, you." It's very interesting. The man who this was an astronomer, and he said, "Yes, but the priest that did it, you know, sort of didn't fully understand about astronomy and everything else." And I said, "So," and he said, "The church does not believe in astronomy." So I said, "What are you going to do with the three wise men then?" So, well, he had a book in his hand. He threw the whole book down on the floor, did a dance on top of the book, and he went off and got a priest. And he came back with a priest, and the priest is there, and him, and they're having this great discussion. And then the next year I went back, and everything, all the big hordes of posters and everything debunking everything to do with Dan Brown's book was gone. And now all they're trying to do is cover over the line with chairs. And so I don't know what happened after that man lost his rag. finished all those great things that were there. So, but it has the most amazing thing. I believe that Mary Magdalene has four children. Kathleen McGowan, Margaret Starbird, a lot of other people believe that Mary Magdalene had only three children. But I can show you in this wonderful church, Mary Magdalene with four children. And I've always believed, and I believe firmly in my heart, that Mary Magdalene had four children. And so it is all in this church. It opens you up, and I will show you exactly where Mary Magdalene is with her four children. And it's right in Saint-Sulpice. And then after that, we go check into our hotel, which is near the Louvre, and then we walk down to the Louvre, have lunch, and I show people a certain part of the Louvre, and then I let them explore the Louvre for themselves for the rest of the afternoon, or they can go visit Notre Dame or whatever it is they would like to do for the rest of the afternoon until we end up having our farewell dinner. And that is on Saturday night, and people can go home on Sunday. A lot of people stay on. We have, I would say, 85% of people stay on for an extra couple of days in Paris. So, any questions after all of that?
Bravo! Bravo!
Thank you.
Sounds great.
So, anybody got any questions?
When we finish in Paris, those that are going home from there, is there transportation to the airport?
If there's just one person, they take the blue shuttle, and that takes them. It's $35, I think, to the airport. If you have two people, it's cheaper to take a car. But if there's just one person, it's $35 to the airport.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because people are going at all different times, it's impossible to arrange transport. Mm. And but other than that, usually, you know, the flights are in the morning. So you'll have people leaving the hotel anytime from 5 o'clock in the morning on, if they're going home that day, on the Sunday morning. And so it depending on which airline you're going with, and they all have, most of them are gone by 11 o'clock in the morning, and most of the flights. So depending on where you're going to and what airline you're flying with. Some airlines have a couple of flights, and so it depends on which one you booked yourself on.
How many people generally are on the pilgrimage with you?
On the France one, I would say an average of 17.
Okay.
Over the years, you know, I've had as high as 27. I wouldn't do 27 again.
Wow.
I now have a limit of 22 people on any of my tours. And so because it's easier for me, and it's more inclusive for all the people. And, and the only reason that I did 27 one year to France was because I wanted to, some people that were let down by somebody else on the tour, I took pity on them and let them come with me.
Oh.
And so so that gave me six other people, which I, you know, normally wouldn't do. And one time to Egypt, I had 37 people, but I had two co-leaders with me. And so that's different when you have that, because you have three people then taking care of that many people. And but I generally do not go over 22 people. And that's 21 people plus myself.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the limit. I find that works best for me. And it's easy. It works well for the group. It is something that people can and communicate. It's a small enough group. You know, I find that the big groups that people don't bond as well. And so that's why I like to keep the groups that little bit smaller.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you go with people like Tom Kenyon and all those, they have 50, 60 people. And, you know, they're just huge groups. And not that he does France, but on his like on Greg Braden, he does Peru like I do, and he has on virtually the same tour, and he'll have 50-60 people on that tour. And you know, I don't see how you can interact with 50-60 people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so that's just me. And so I did this for myself, and you know, the 1 year I did break the my own rule to, because I took pity on these other people, and it was difficult, because you know they had their six people that were bonded, because they were already had decided on the tour, that what they wanted to do on the tour. And so, you know, they weren't really, you know, the people that are drawn to my tour are really people that are connected into my energy, the energy that I bring as a group leader, as a facilitator. So you know, we all attract the people that come for our teachings, or for that are inspired to be with like-minded people of the same energy. And I firmly believe this, you know.
Yes. Thank you.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Do you go at the same time, like every year, to France?
No, it's always in September, but it can be anywhere from the 1st to the 14th. The reason that I'm doing the 1st of September this year is that I need to be in Scotland for the autumn equinox. And the reason that I need to be in Scotland is it's the opening of the third doorway of an interdimensional doorway of the 13 steps, the 13 doorways in the ascension consciousness process. And so with the final one being winter solstice 2023. And so we started the process on spring equinox 2013. And so it goes forward from there. And that all goes back to the ancient thing. It's back to the Cathars and to what we talked about, that in 1986, they said the Church of Love, we had harmonic convergence in 2007, or 1987. And then we had at winter solstice 2007, we went into a period of transparency. And as you know, in 2008 was a year about transparency. We went into a five-year period of transparency, of awakened consciousness. And so then we move forward from that. And now this year we're in Awakening to the Soul's Journey.
Okay.
So that's why we're in all of this stuff. And a lot of people are looking, awakening up now to what is it that my soul wants me to do. And so that's why I do these talks about the journey of ascension. Because mm-hmm. to get people to understand what is happening with them. Okay.
Yes.
So you're going to do the Scotland trip right after this one?
Yep. That's this year.
We want to go next year.
Yeah. Oh, well, I don't.
How about next year?
I don't know that. I haven't worked out that schedule yet. I will have that worked out by the end of July.
When you figure it out, sign us up.
Okay. But they may not be together. This is the first time the two of them have run together.
Right. Did you ever go to Morocco or Casablanca?
No, I have not done. You know, you're the second person. Somebody else asked me that earlier on today. Do you ever do Morocco? No. I've been to Morocco, but I have not done a tour there. I do Ireland, England, Scotland, France, Egypt, Turkey, Peru, Italy, Israel, and Cambodia, Thailand, and Burma. So they're all the countries at this moment in time that I have done tours. Oh, I do Poland as well. And so I have four basic tours that I do every year: Ireland, England, Scotland, and France. And then I have another four that I add in, pick out of the rest and decide which ones. Like this year I'm doing Peru, Italy, and Thailand, Cambodia, and Burma, and one, oh yeah, I'm doing the Camino. Yeah. And so I have not decided. The only thing that I know definitely I'm doing next year, I'm doing a tour to Guatemala, and I'm doing a tour to Egypt.
Sedona.
One of these years I will do an American tour. I would love to do a tour starting, at the Four Corners and working its magic from there. And I've been traveling around doing some little research on that. And one of these fine days, when the energy is right, I will do it. And and India I will be doing next year. Some years I do a little bit more. I do 10 tours. I do India and Sri Lanka as well. But then that takes me out in January and February. We'll see what next year brings. I'll have to wait and see.
This is Susan. I'm going to say goodnight. It's late here on the East Coast.
Okay, Susan.
But thank you very much.
Okay, you take care, my dear.
Bye.
Yes, bye-bye.
God bless. Bye-bye.
This is Lisa. I'm going to say goodnight, too, on the East Coast.
Okay.
And I was just wondering also one question. Is there a cutoff date that you have that people should sign up for? Bye.
Well, I like to know 60 days beforehand, but I will take people after that. But
okay.
It really helps me if I know beforehand. And because it helps in the planning, because I got to hold the biggest problem is holding hotel bedrooms.
Mm-hmm.
And I need to know what kind of transport I need.
Okay.
So what size bus? They're the two big things, the hotel rooms and the bus. The things that I need to know.
All right, thank you very much.
So the sooner one can let me know, the better.
All right.
Okay, thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Good night.
How is your France-Spain?
It's coming along. I'm still getting bookings for that.
Okay. How does it compare with just the France when you've combined them, though?
It's a very different kind of tour because it's starting at Chart, and then it's working its way all the ways down. We visit Orleans and Joan of Arc, and we work all the ways, and we're on the Camino line. We're staying on the Camino line.
Okay.
And we're working down. It's a totally different type of tour. It's a
totally
pilgrimage.
Okay.
It's a pilgrimage.
Okay.
And it doesn't have the theme like in France, like on the what I would call my France tour. It's totally dedicated to Magdalene Cathars and all of that. It has a specific energy.
Whereas the one I was drawn to was the France one.
Yeah. Whereas this is a pilgrimage.
Okay.
So the Camino is a pilgrimage, and so it's a beautiful tour. It has we see lots of black Madonnas, lots of beautiful churches. People get to walk a little bit, on the line. Like if we have time, we go off it a little bit. I have different surprises for people depending on what we do, how much ground we cover each day. Like there's about 30 kilometers off the route, there is, and it's on the route as well, but there's kind of different branches of the route that come together of the pilgrimage from different places. And there's one, where Saint Bernadette, where she is buried. And so I like, if we have time, we're not all going down that, because that's one that starts later down in France. And so, but if we have time, we'll take a side trip off to see that. So I have different little things depending on the time. I always have surprises on these tours.
Right.
And the surprises are things that I have not put on. If we have the time, I take people to see them.
Mm-hmm.
And so.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Okay. Anything else?
Nope. I don't think so.
Okay. You have a lovely evening, and thank you for joining us.
Okay. You too. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Mm, bye.
I guess that was it.